case of the morning is United States against Mendoza.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, good morning. Your Honor, there are two issues before you today. One is the sufficiency of the evidence in a criminal trial, specifically narrowed to the conspiracy count in this matter. And the other issue is the sentencing. Now, the trial was a pretty long trial that with a lot of witnesses and a lot of cooperating witnesses and an embedded informant. And so the sentencing and the argument regarding the conspiracy is intertwined with their testimony and very factual in matter. The conspiracy charge, as the government charged it, was only for the fall of 2005.
Rule 29 motion made in the district court?
I was not the attorney of record. And
I asked whether you were the attorney of record. I asked whether a motion was made.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So how has this issue been preserved for appellate review?
Well, as we point out and the government pointed out, it's on plain error, Your Honor. It's first time brought to the court here, and we believe that because counsel did not move for judgment or acquittal, the standard before this court is plain error.
Have we ever found plain error?
Excuse me?
Have we ever found plain error after a jury is convicted?
It's a very, very difficult standard, Your Honor.
No, I asked a concrete question.
Have
we ever found plain error after a jury is convicted?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So in your case, why couldn't the jury have thought that Mr. Gabriel Mendoza was conspiring with Mr. Luis Mendoza, whether or not they're related is really immaterial, to sell the cocaine and methamphetamine?
Well, because there are two individuals that mainly dealt with Luis Mendoza and Gabriel Mendoza. And these individuals, one of them was an embedded informant by the name of Fidel Sanchez. His entire job was to try to deal and get Mr. Gabriel Mendoza to sell him drugs. He was not successful at all for a long period of time, and for a period of time where he became a business partner, supposedly, and a close, trusted friend.
But they're controlled buys with Mr. Aguayo, right?
Not directly from Mr. Mendoza. Mr. Mendoza did not sell or deliver the drugs.
They live in the same house.
Correct.
If it's a plain error standard, there certainly would be reason, I think, for the jury to think that Mr. Aguayo is buying the drugs from both of them and they're sharing the proceeds.
Again, it is a very difficult standard for us to prove and or to show the court. And I believe that the record was made. I was not the attorney of record at the time. I do believe that Mr. Luis Mendoza, who is, I believe, still a fugitive, but that's not here or there, lived at that house, had the keys to the shed, had access to the entire house. The drugs that were found by his bedroom.
As did Gabriel Mendoza.
Like
he was locked out of the rest of the house, was it?
No, but he was not at the house. There was, I believe the government claims that Mr. Mendoza fled.
Well, because he fled and then disappeared for 4 years, abandoning his family, yes.
Right, that's what they claim. There's absolutely no evidence that he fled, actually. I mean, there may have been testimony that he was...
stayed away for 4 years? That doesn't allow the inference that it was flight?
He has he was not there for a very long time, on very long periods of time, in the past as well. There's plenty of testimony on the record that he was not there in 2003. He was a lot of the time he spent in Washington, in Mexico. In 2003, the allegations of the 5 kilos in the trailer home, he wasn't there either. Supposedly, he is directing people over the phone, but there was no actual evidence that he was doing any of that. Fidel Sanchez was entrusted with doing the work for the government, and there's not one phone conversation or one recorded conversation to show that Mr. Mendoza actually did any dealings. Now, again, because this is a very tough burden for us, I would like to speak a little bit, if Your Honors allow, about the sentencing. The sentencing here, Mr. Mendoza was sentenced to...
Where can we find the district court's explanation of its sentence?
Excuse me?
Where can we find the district court's explanation of its sentence?
The district court had a sentencing memorandum that they filed, and...
Transcript of the proceedings and the sentence, and there's a sentencing memorandum. That's right.
Right.
Where can we find them? Circuit Rule 30 requires them to be in the appendix to the appellant's brief. That's where we're supposed to find them. Your signature certifies that you have complied with Circuit Rule 30. And yet the appendix to your brief contains neither the transcript nor the sentencing memorandum.
Your Honor, I believe that the transcript was there. I do admit that my...
The only thing that's an appendix to your brief is the judgment.
It is in the government's brief, right?
It is in the government's brief, and I agree, and I apologize. It was an oversight that I did not
notice.
It's
not a question of oversight. When you make a representation to the court that everything required by Rule 30 has been included, and we discover that you're lying, that's a serious problem.
I understand, Your Honor. I understand. And, again, it was... there's nothing more for me to say besides...
It's not a question of oversight. It's an affirmative representation on your part. The reason why we set the rule up that way is so that people who make oversights, who don't understand their duties, won't make the certification. And then the clerk will reject their briefs and tell you you have to comply. But you certified compliance.
I accept that rebuke, Your Honor. And... I know the government put it in the record, and...
No, the district court put it in the record.
Correct, but the government added it in their brief. And again, that's... I accept the court's rebuke, Your Honor. What I do believe, Your Honor, if I may, is that the court made in its record, the district court, it seemed to me, and in his sentencing memorandum, referred to an large-scale drug operation that lasted between 2003 to 2005. And I believe the conspiracy involved fall of 2005. Mr. Mendoza did agree, based on the jury's verdict, that there is drugs that were accounted for from the 2003 transactions and the 2005 based on the jury's verdict. However, the calculations that were made by the court to determine the overall guideline level were not substantiated, if I may, in the record, and that the believing Chris Tabler, in his testimony, that was contradicted many times, as I pointed out during the sentencing hearing, by Mr. Arvizu as to the amount of time and the number of transactions and the number of times that Mr. Tabler showed up to buy drugs, they were all contradicted, in addition to the fact that Mr. Tabler could not, his testimony as a customer, and I believe the government agrees, or at least in their brief, they agree that Mr. Tabler was simply a customer. Mr. Arvizu was a worker for Mr. Mendoza. As being a worker for Mr. Mendoza, the same drugs that were given to Mr. Tabler was counted twice because Mr. Tabler was simply a buyer. Mr. Arvizu provided the drugs from Mr. Mendoza. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Grimmer.
Thank you, Your Honor. William Grimmer on behalf of the United States, and I don't know the answer to your question either, Judge, whether or not after a jury verdict you've ever reversed for a plain error, but certainly I'm hoping that this is not the first case if it hasn't happened before. Once a long time ago when I had argued my first case in front of the district court, Judge Sharp told me I was arguing apples and oranges in terms of trying to get my facts straight. So hopefully there are a couple of points I would like to make to the court that I think is important. First of all, obviously credibility determinations are made by the jury. And Judge Miller, I know appellate counsel did not have the opportunity to see Mr. Tabler because he was not trial counsel, but Judge Miller did have that opportunity. And so I believe in terms of assessing the credibility of Mr. Tabler, Judge Miller had both the advantage of seeing him on the witness stand, hearing direct, and I believe a very thorough cross-examination by Mr. Lenio. So I guess number one is when Judge Miller decided to credit the report or credit any information Mr. Tabler had given, there was some basis, in fact, for him to do that. Second of all, during the course of the trial, I believe defense counsel had petitioned or asked for a writ to bring Mr. Luis Mendoza to court. Eventually that was withdrawn when the government withdrew any objection to allowing Juan Lora to be brought forth by the defense and to testify. Obviously, we think that the jury is entitled to hear, well, jury was entitled to hear, at least from the defendant's standpoint, the fact that Mr. Mendoza, for whatever reason, was claiming responsibility for all the items. We actually would submit to the court that, again, is further evidence of, I guess, his willingness to cover for his partner in crime and further strengthens the argument that there was no plain error committed in terms of this particular conspiracy.
So the evidence in the trial of their, if you will, joint operations came primarily from Mr. Aguayo and Mr. Sanchez or more?
Well, I think there's more. Obviously, those were two of the informants, and certainly we acknowledged even in closing that Mr. Sanchez got paid an awful lot of money, and we got very little bit in terms of return. But again, that money that was paid and is mentioned in the brief of the appellate was over a long period of time. But no, I would say that it's all of the evidence. Some of the other things that I would like to point to in terms of certainly Mr. Aguayo, and again, his credibility was thoroughly flushed out during cross-examination. He had a lot of reasons to lie, no doubt about it, and those were all brought out and bared before the jury. But he certainly was, both he and Mr. Sanchez talked about specific drug dealings, but the circumstances surrounding those dealings, as well as what happened on November 17th, the evidence found at the 2219 Benham address also supported, I guess, or corroborated in part both Mr. Aguayo and what Mr. Sanchez had been saying. And what do I mean by that? Well, Mr. Aguayo had said that they had shared the responsibility in terms of delivering the drugs. And did Mr. Gabriel Mendoza, the defendant in this case, actually handle the drugs? No. It was the theory of the government that he was a CEO, a boss. He was able to direct other people, and one of those people he directed was Luis Mendoza. On 874 through 876, in closing argument, my argument to the jury that I asked him to consider on the conspiracy count in 309 CR 16 of the fall of 2005 was that was in fact the agreement between Luis Mendoza and Gabriel Mendoza. But what is found at the house is, in fact, I think, also corroborative. A pound of meth, they find Luis Mendoza there. Barry Schneider, one of the officers who was approaching the house to execute the search warrant, testified that he saw Gabriel Mendoza leaving. Aurora Ventura, the girlfriend for many years, indicated that when she left for work at 3:15, they were there together. And so when Caesar says, yes, I was ordering up 2 pounds of meth, and Gabriel told me that, hey, if I'm not there, get them from the old man, I think is corroborated by some of the physical evidence that was seized back on November 17th of 2005. So from that standpoint, I would submit there is additional evidence in the record. I think also when Lewis is apprehended, he does make the statement, anything you find is mine. And he has a key to the shed. But now that particular shed, again, is something that's on the property of Gabriel Mendoza. And Lewis has a key to that particular shed. But both, there is testimony in the record, and again, I think it comes back from from Caesar Aguirre, that in fact both had been, he had seen both working on that particular shed, both Gabriel and Lewis. I put it together that Gabriel and Lewis traveled together from the state of Washington at one point, according to Fidel. They lived together at the residence for about 3 months, and those 3 months included September, October, November. And it was during that particular period of time that we had drug activity, first in the form of a controlled buy from Caesar, second in Fidel's purchasing an ounce of cocaine for $760 and receiving a sample of meth on October 13th. Transaction where both are involved, and then finally the November 17th.
Okay, so I take it Mr. Gabriel Mendoza has found a way to avoid being removed from the United States. It's a life in prison sentence, right?
It is a severe sentence. It is a very severe sentence. And I think the record bears out that neither Judge Miller nor the government was particularly fond of life sentences. It was the first one that I had asked for that I could recall in 27 years, and I will just stand on what Judge Miller said. He is not fond of them. But he also indicated that this was an operation of breathtaking scope, and I think that's what the evidence bore out.
Mr. Grimmer, was this a task force operation, or was it?
It was a task force operation. We have a DEA task force located in South Bend. Mr. Walker, Mr. Schneider, and several of those officers testified in corroborating some of the buys, the controlled buys. I take what you say very seriously, Judge, and going back and when it was raised as to whether Judge Miller had properly sentenced, we can disagree with his findings. The defense, the appellant can disagree, but ultimately I think the record bears out that procedurally and substantively, Judge Miller followed the law that has been set down, and that is that he carefully considered those 3553A factors. He worked hard to get to the guidelines appropriately as step one, but he never said that that's the be-all and the end-all, or that that's what the sentence should be. And I think when you look at the entire record and what he has done, I think when he says he's not a fan of life sentences, I think he meant it, but I think in this case it was warranted. If there are no other questions. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.